Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And welcome back to Meeting of the Minds. Today I'm here with the great John Quint. John, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Greatly respect your work, all the good things you do. Had a great conversation with Tom Barry from West Side Barbell the other week, and he couldn't stop singing your praises. So I said, I got to get John on the show. And I know I've heard Louis bring up your name many times on different interviews.
Yeah. I've been fortunate. I live in Columbus, Ohio. I kind of have a background in bodybuilding and you know, I'm a neuromuscular therapist. So, you know, Tom and I's path crossed. And then obviously I met, I think, Lou right before Tom, but yeah, so it's probably going on over 10 years of knowing these guys and being able to work with these guys, so I'm pretty fortunate.
Excellent, excellent. That's great stuff. Now, tell me, I guess, probably before we get into the specifics, maybe you'd want to set it up a little bit more with how we should be thinking about the body. Maybe that's a better place to start, right? Is there common misconceptions of the way we look at the body and injury and strength? Maybe let's start there with a little bit of an overview.
Yeah, that's a really good way to start it off. I think it depends, right? Because when you're talking about, like, let's say wrestling, for instance, like the wrestler is going to have a different lens and the coach is going to have a different lens, right? And there'll be blind spots in between, you know, what the wrestler sees, what the coach sees. Obviously, that's why there's a coach there. And then from my perspective, I guess, being a neuromuscular therapist, I kind of focus on like the joints, the connective tissue, and the muscle. So I kind of work, you know, if you think of the body as a complex system, think of kind of like the components or the determinants of that system is kind of what I try to focus on or assess. And that's kind of my lens of what I see. So when you see a wrestler, you know, you would see traits of a wrestler, let's say, this wrestler has a good gas tank, right? So then I'd be like, okay, well, I kind of think of it as they have a really good aerobic base, right? This wrestler has power. Well, then I'll think like, okay, well, this wrestler probably has a lot of fast twitch muscle fibers that, right? And because, you know, training is a mechanism to change the individual. So it's like, obviously how, you know, if you're using training correctly, then, you know, the wrestler's determinants are changing how you want them. So I kind of view it from a different perspective where I think about like joints, connective tissue, and muscle. Whereas, you know, a wrestling coach is obviously going to think about maybe technique, you know, and strength and all that other stuff. So there's definitely blind spots from what I can see to what someone like you or a wrestling coach can see. So that's why I think it's really good to work in conjunction with everyone. That way you try to fill as many blind spots as possible.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And when you're looking at that person, are you looking for certain things right away? I guess we'll start with just athletes in general. When someone comes to you, how are you looking at them? What are the things that your eye is drawn to that maybe the average person misses?
Yeah, so I've been fortunate. So I teach continuing education as well. So Not only am I like a practitioner, but I'm also kind of like trying to always update my model of how I work with athletes. And so I work with functional anatomy seminars. And one of the things that we have there is a functional range assessment. So this kind of like assesses the movement capacities of the, let's say a wrestler. So if we just kind of keep a common point, right? So you have a wrestler. So when that wrestler comes in, I kind of want to see like, are their joints in a state of function? Are they in a state of dysfunction? How much joint workspace do they have? Like, so how much range of motion do they have? Like, and then I start to piece together from that. So, you know, in Columbus, we have a lot of good wrestlers here. So I've been able to assess wrestlers. And then, you know, also with Westside, you know, we have a strong relationship with a lot of fighters in the UFC. So I've kind of seen like, let's say some of the common issues with what happens from, you know, grappling type sports, right? Because one of the things that you probably know this too, with your background, as you get better at a sport, you're going to start to move away from health unless you're doing something to kind of hedge that, right? And so I look at treatment and training as a way to hedge that specificity that's being developed from that wrestler, right? So one of the things that I see with wrestlers is starting at an early age and really specializing. I'm probably, you see this too, right? And so I use essentially treatment and training as a way to like not to enable that person's nervous system to still specialize, but don't give up the joint range of motion, the joint function, the stuff that on the back end is going to kind of collapse the system when they don't expect it, unfortunately.
That makes sense. And that assessment that you were using, I remember when I was a personal trainer back in, I don't know, 2012, something like that, we were using the functional movement screen. I brought it up to Tom. He said, yeah, that's a good thing to know also, but he's more into what you're speaking about here. What exactly is that? Where can people find information on that? What is the average? Can the person do that at home on their own?
What do you think? Yeah, for sure. So think of a functional movement screen, right? Or anytime you're trying to screen or analyze movement, essentially what's happening is if you think of the wrestler as just like joint space, so the amount of space between bones that allows for this bone to move relative to that bone, right? So that's obviously enables them to internally move. So think of that as something that's objective. So you can measure that. So you can start to get data points and say like, hey, this guy has 30 degrees of hip internal rotation, right? So that's a stat that you can start to, so because part of the issue is what you've probably seen this and what I've seen running this assessment now for probably about 5 years and getting a lot of data points on athletes is the best athletes compensate for what they don't have. So, you know, case in point, I won't use his name, but you know, in Columbus, we got a lot of good football players. Well, this guy who was an amazing football player, you know, made it into the league, was able to change positions. It was just probably one of the best football players to come through Ohio State. And it's interesting, when I started working with him, I had to really, it was kind of bizarre. It was the first time where I'm assessing someone's hip and I'm like, this hip doesn't rotate. And then it kind of dawned on me. I'm like, man, this guy is, his nervous system is so, he's so good at organizing his movement that he can organize without a hip, right? So that's, yeah. And then I just continued to see that trend, you know, because I've been fortunate enough, I've been able to assess like a lot of NFL athletes, pro golfers. So a wide range of guys, you know, we got Ohio State here. So some of the Ohio State wrestlers. So before I do a treatment, I have to do this assessment so that I know what I'm going to do. And it's interesting, like the trend that I just continue to see reinforced is what happens is people don't have functioning joints, right? But the crazy part is what you'll see is high level guys, they can pass a movement screen because they figured out how to compensate without that hip, but it's coming at the cost of their knee. So you're talking about like a meniscus at the back, maybe L5, S1 or those lumbar issues. So that's the reason why like movement screening, like Tom said, yeah, it's like one thing, but the problem is, you know, these high level athletes, especially when you talk about wrestling, you know, I grew up wrestling. I was never that great of a wrestler, right? But I've loved the sport. And so every year I watch the NCAA tournaments and all that stuff. I mean, these guys are unbelievable, right? Like it's insane. You think that someone's got a takedown and these guys are like the scrambling ability. Like, so these guys are just absolutely unbelievable athletes. And one of the bad side about being an absolutely unbelievable athlete is if you don't have, let's say, a hip joint, at some point in time, you can only compensate for not having that capacity. And generally the problem is they don't know it if they don't have an assessment.
Right.
So to try to answer the question, sorry, I was a little bit long-winded.
Oh, that's great.
The reason why I don't do the movement screen, because I don't really care how that person organizes themselves to do a predetermined task. What I care is, does this guy have a hip joint? Because I know you're going to need a hip joint. So if you have one, I don't care how you organize the movement. But if you don't have one and you can organize the movement, that's almost worse for me, because I'm going, wow, this guy is so good that essentially at some point you're not going to be able to compensate for that lack of capacity. And then that's inevitably, unfortunately, when something just blows up and then people really don't have any idea why, but that's why.
That's excellent. No, that makes a lot of sense when you think about it like that. So what should maybe a coach look for that maybe they don't have the same trained eye as you, but what could a parent or coach kind of take a quick look at to see something's off?
Yeah. So essentially, like, what I'll tell people, right, is, you know, all functioning joints behave the same, but all dysfunctioning joints behave uniquely, right? So one of the things that happens is if you look at a hip joint, so a hip joint is a ball and socket joint. And essentially, really what it means is the ball has to rotate relative to the socket, right? So an easy thing to do is, like, if this hip joint, if it doesn't rotate, right, now you're having issues, right? So, like, an easy assessment would be for a wrestler to do is, let's say, you know, do your bent knee hip flexion. So when you pull your knee to your chest, like, if you're on the ground, you should feel tissue stretching on the backside of that hip joint. If you don't feel anything stressing on the backside of that hip joint, or you feel a pinch in the front, or you're like, I feel this in my low back, you got a hip that doesn't move, right? So essentially, there's tests that you can do. It's kind of like I would probably refer to, like, to get the coach involved with somebody that really knows how to assess, because you can just rapidly assess and then you can start to categorize kids. Hey, these kids over here, they don't have hip IR. These kids over here don't have hip ER. Then you can really start to address, because, you know, at the end of the day, I really think that the ability to move is critically important. And that's what's going to create, you know, if you look at what movement is, it's the ability to adapt, right? So if these kids can continue to adapt and you can maintain that adaptability, they're going to be a much better wrestler. The thing that I fear for kids, because unfortunately I've seen this multiple times, is the kid starts to specialize in wrestling, right? And what happens is function determines structure. So then as they get better at the functioning of wrestling, the structure of the bones start to mold that way. And that's what you don't want. So that's the reason why you see, you know, I'm sure Tom's probably talked about it, or Lou's probably talked about the conjugate sequencing system with Westside. Essentially, you're trying to do a lot of GPP, right? And so my whole thing on is, if a kid is experiencing joint pain, like, there's something wrong with that joint, because all dysfunctional joints are painful. So at that point in time, and, you know, a lot of people will blame muscles or all, but realistically, it's the function of the joint. So something to look out for is just joint pain and joint discomfort, because, you know, you should be able to move pain-free. I mean, that's what a normal joint feels like.
That's great and very practical. Excellent. And now, seeing how young kids start playing sports, like, they probably start playing whatever, t-ball, soccer, when they're 4 or 5 years old. Some of the kids maybe start specializing when they're in fifth grade, which I think is way too young, but let's just say they do that. Or even if they don't, is there a certain age that you would recommend that the athletes get checked out? Like, the parents just, hey, just get checked by a physical therapist or someone. Who would they go to, and around what age would you have them do that, if you would do that at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I would definitely have them do, for sure. And I would start them, I mean, you know, I'm biased because obviously I'm a therapist, and I, I find this data to be extremely valuable. And we can get into why later, but essentially this data is extremely valuable for the sustainability of the kid. But I would start really young, honestly. I would start, so like, think about it, like if they're able to start to play sports or organized activities, then maybe that they, you should start getting them assessed, because who knows, you could have like the fear is, right? This is the fear that I have for a lot of kids that I've assessed over the years, that maybe I haven't done a good job of articulating to the parents, right? Is like, I don't want a kid to not, let's say, have a shoulder joint and learn how to play baseball, because I mean, that's just gonna, like, that's a recipe for, right? So essentially what you're trying to do is think of the nervous system as a system that can kind of organize joints, connective tissue, and muscle. And you want that nervous system to have the correct, you know, joint function so that it organizes it in an optimal manner, instead of essentially getting, you know, distortion of the joint, dysfunction, compensation, all that other stuff. Because I really think that, you know, and this is how West Side is, that, you know, training is a mechanism used to specifically increase the capacity of the athlete, not pull from it. Right. So yeah, I would say, to answer the question, as soon as someone can start to play organized activities, you know, have them get, you know, just, and it can start with just the spine, the shoulders and the hips, where you're just looking to see, hey, does the shoulder, is the shoulder in a state of function? Is the hip in a state? And then, you know, because after the assessment, you can essentially, the assessment is just an algorithm that tells you what to do.
Right. Right. Now, should it be a person with a certain kind of specialization? Who should they go to? Is there certain initials we should be looking for? Anything like that?
Yeah. So I would say, so I work for, like I said, functional anatomy seminars, and we teach a course called functional range assessment. So I would go on to functionalrangeanatomyseminars.com. It's kind of wordy. But then you can find an FRA provider near you. And then essentially you would just send your kid in for an FRA. I mean, they can be done essentially over the internet too. Now with, you know, the pandemic, it's obviously, it's changed how everybody works. So, you know, I know me and several individuals that I'm in business with, you know, we run it through the internet as well. So you, it's something that you can even reach out to a provider, have them go through the internet. But I think the reason why, and unfortunately I haven't been able to listen to you or Tom's conversation, but, you know, Tom and I work in conjunction with each other, because and one of the reasons why that's been so successful is because it's the same thing. We're essentially clearing blind spots, right? So like, if I know I have a guy that has a lumbar spine dysfunction, we're probably going to totally change the exercise selection of that person. So that once again, you know, you got a dysfunctional spine and you're doing, you know, exercises that require spine function in it, they're compensating somewhere else. So that's why we kind of piggyback off of each other and use each other in conjunction. And then when we get clearance through treatment and assessment that, hey, we've moved this joint from a state of dysfunction into a state of function, now we can start to push training and whatever movements that you want. But at the end of the day, I don't know that training has to be, you know, for youth kids. I don't know that it has to be that complicated. I think, you know, because we're dealing with professional athletes or high level collegiate athletes, right? But when you're talking about kids, yeah, I mean, I think they need to be able to maintain, you know, the health of their joints and just essentially get their nervous system experience with really good moving parts.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So we would be looking for functional range, someone who is specialized in that, you know, and then have them evaluated probably as soon as they start playing sports. Would you have them, because I think about it selfishly for myself, I have a 2-year-old son, eventually he's going to start playing sports. We're starting with a blank slate. What are the best practices for him? If he starts playing soccer at 5, he gets evaluated, and then maybe again at 7, just, hey, let's, like, you have a checkup with the doctor and the dentist. Why wouldn't you do that with the physical therapist?
Yeah.
Is that how you see it?
Yeah, 100%. So it's interesting. I always kind of, you know, I've had to do a lot of research working in continuing education. So I extensively researched the conjugate sequencing system, which is essentially, that's the Soviet system, right? That everybody talks about, that essentially led to Soviet dominance in sports. That's well documented. That's essentially the system that Lou has brought into the West that's absolutely obliterated all powerlifting records, right? So if we look at what the Soviets did, it's interesting. You know, they were so big on GPP, and for people that maybe don't know what that is, it's just general physical preparedness, right? And the whole belief was they didn't want to specialize a kid until they kind of knew more about that kid, right? So the beautiful part about this is essentially GPP is like, think of like sled drags, body weight stuff, just general stuff that you're not trying to get that kid to specialize. You want to maintain the structure of their bones. So you don't want their shoulder to start get distorted because you got a five-year-old that's just playing baseball like he's a major league pitcher, right?
Essentially sustain the function of the athlete
until, you know, you start to get later into life, let's say 13, 15, because you don't know, you know, your kid could be 2 years old. I mean, he could hit a crazy growth spurt. You don't know what that kid's going to be, so you don't really want him to specialize into something that may not pan out to be right. So the Soviets would always essentially be like around that 13 age, right, when they're hitting puberty, you would maybe start to see like, hey, this kid's going to be a really good wrestler. Let's start to maintain this GPP in parallel with more SPP or specialized training for that individual.
Right. That makes sense.
And yeah. So to answer your question, yeah, I mean, like a yearly thing would be good. And then it's the same thing. It would be as needed. So it's not something that you want to become reliant upon, right? Like if there's no joint dysfunction, then yeah, I mean, just continue to do what you're doing. You know, we have things built in on the back end, these things called controlled articular rotations. I think those would be good to teach the kid, right? Like that's essentially what I would do. But once again, it's really no specialized stuff until that athlete is their structure is fully mature. Once it's fully mature, you can start to hammer the gas and you're going to probably start to see spikes in performance or emergences that are off the chart. And that's what you want, because that's what creates sustainability. Like a lot of kids can be really good in high school, right? Because they specialize when they're in middle school, but then the kids that didn't specialize that then figure out how to specialize with much better structure, much better muscular structural system, obviously they're going to make it much longer.
That makes sense. Now, is this something people could get certified in, or is it just stick with the specialist? Like, don't waste your time. It's too much. It's too in-depth. Just go to specialist.
Yeah, so this is something that so in functional anatomy seminars, there's essentially like it's called functional range conditioning. So there's multiple components. It's kind of growing into a much more complex system. So it kind of depends on what you want. So for instance, like think of functional range conditioning as essentially like it started off as mobility training to try to get more mobility, but now it's essentially emerged into something where it's like we're trying to maintain the health of your joints and then layer on performance. So one of the things that we're in the process of getting done with is working on a strength course, an internal strength course that goes along with that. Now we have a manual therapy side of it too, functional range release. And then that specializes in upper extremity, lower extremity, spine, and then the assessment course. And then in parallel with that, we also have what's called kin stretch. And kin stretch is kind of like, that's your GPP. So my wife is a kin stretch instructor. So we're here in Columbus. So she teaches that. I don't know if you know who Matt Brown is, UFC fighter. Okay, so he's a longtime West Side guy, been real good friends and been able to work with him for a really long time too. So he has a facility and he's the one that actually wanted my wife to start to teach kin stretch. So kin stretch is like a really good movement-based practice. But once again, like kind of all of this stuff, it starts off as general and then goes to specific instead of just really specific stuff where I think that's where people get really caught up in. There's a lot of research that's coming out into this too. Multiple books have been written on this early specialization of kids. Because like I said, the function determines the structure. So as soon as the joint, you know, like think about it, when you're throwing a baseball, that's not really a natural movement it's natural. You can do it, but you're not supposed to do it repeatedly with a high frequency, high duration, all this stuff. Right. So that's going to start to distort joint function. So, you know, if I had a kid or when I have a kid, I'm not going to want them to specialize, you know, until you're 12, 13, right. Because I want to one, figure out what they like to do, but then two, I don't want to allocate all of these resources to trying to get them to specialize when they're five, when who knows what's going to happen, what sport's going to come about, or, you know, like we have lacrosse here. Lacrosse wasn't big until several years ago. So you just don't know the opportunities that the kids are going to have. And that's why I think it's good to just generalize them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think about, because if kids aren't thinking about this at a young age, or if parents or coaches aren't thinking about it, then the kid's done with sports, let's say, usually at best, even if they're a very good athlete, maybe 22, 23 years old, and they're done, unless they're pro or, you know, something like that. And now I think about myself. My shoulder's never quite the same. I was done with wrestling at 22. My brother just went in to get knee surgery because of running, but it's not because of running. It's because of years of wrestling where that didn't get taken care of. My other brother, lower back problems. So it's like, if you're not doing this ahead of time, you're going to spend basically the rest of your life making up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, I'm in the same boat as you guys. So unfortunately, like, I didn't learn about this stuff, you know, until after I got done competing in bodybuilding. So it's like, it's unfortunate that I didn't know that information prior, but now that's the reason why I spend essentially my life is essentially trying to, like, reverse this. So even my training aspect of it, you know, I do kin stretch with Matt, my wife. I do internal based training more than I actually do external based training and that's hard because, you know, I'm a bodybuilder at heart. So it's like, you know, you're a wrestler. So, like, well, I don't know. I grew up wrestling too. I don't have the gas tank to do that anymore, you know, but I enjoy lifting weights. But in order for me to lift weights, unfortunately, you know, I have to do all this other stuff to maintain the health of my joints. Cause if I get so good at a bench press, I'm going to, like, that's not what my shoulder's designed to do. So eventually that bench press is going to take me out. I'm not going to be able to do what I love to do. And so that's the reason why I invest so much time and resources in doing the training and treatment that I do.
That makes sense. Makes sense. And then I ask more of the practical questions. What are some of the major problems that you see wrestlers tend to have as a whole, generally speaking?
Yeah, I really think, you know, like in powerlifting, they have the big three, you know, your bench, your deadlift, and your squat. And I think in wrestling, you have to have really high function in the hip joint, in the shoulder joints, and in the spine. Right. And what do I mean by high function? I mean that, like, essentially, so earlier I touched on how all functioning joints behave the same. So essentially what happens is when you have, let's say, a ball and socket joint, because that's essentially what the hip and the shoulder are. There's a little differences, but it's not important. But essentially a ball is supposed to rotate in that hip or in the socket. And when you get to end rotation, you should feel stretching in that hip. And if you don't, and that means that the joint capsule, the connective tissue that encapsulates that joint, is behaving as a rate limiting tissue. And so it's doing its job. Well, what happens is if you start to rotate that hip joint, you get a pinch or you get a hard block. Well, now what's happening is you have a joint dysfunction, right? And what happens over time, as you get that hard block, obviously you'll develop bone growth, all this other stuff, but that range of motion continues to narrow. And as the wrestler's range of motion continues to narrow, his adaptability decreases, his ability to actually, like, express all the, everything that he has in him is now slowly starting to shrink on the back end. Now, the problem is, so essentially I think for wrestling, you need to make sure that the hip has high function, the shoulder has high function, and the spine has high function. As far as being able, there's no just joint dysfunction in there, because what's going to happen is if you have a high functioning hip joint, now you're able to produce really dynamic motions. You have access to all of your glutes. You have access to all of your hip flexors, right? Whereas think about it, like if you have zero hip IR, right, or hip internal, if that thing doesn't rotate at all, you're not using any of those muscles. So it's having to go down into your knee. It's having to go down into your back. So the thing that I would say is I would make sure that the hips, the spine, and the shoulders, because those are where all the degrees of freedom are coming from, or movement that's needed. And if you can essentially sustain that throughout that wrestler's career, then that wrestler is going to be in a lot better opportunities to deal with the volatility that comes from wrestling. I mean, you may get violently taken in one way, that hip's got to rotate. If it doesn't rotate, boom, now you get rotation at the knee. There's an ACL, right? So I think that for the wrestler, from a joint perspective, if they just are able to really focus on the shoulders, the hips, and the spine and be able to maintain that, it'll make them better at wrestling too. Because if I give you like you're a wrestling coach, if I tell you, hey, I got a kid over here, everything's the same, but this kid over here, he's got all of this range of motion in his hips, he can control it, right? And this kid over here has really shitty hips. Which one are you going to want to coach? You're going to want to coach, right? Which one would you want to be? You would want to be the kid with the hips. So I think that's essentially where I would focus at, is those three joints, because once those three joints are working, everything just seems to organize in a manner that's optimal for the athlete. And then we also know, especially Tom and I, from the data that we get in from the athletes in season, stuff like this, as soon as we start to see a retraction of that range of motion, accommodation or performance will start to stagnate and set in.
Right. And what specific exercises or prehab or band work, what would you tell the wrestler to do concretely to prevent this?
Yeah. So we do what I talked about was controlled articular rotation. So now you should be able to look those up and find them almost anywhere, like on Instagram or whatever platform that you use. But essentially what a controlled articular rotation does is it takes your joint through its entire active range of motion. Right. And so we know that if you're doing these, think of it as almost like a linchpin. If you're doing these, you're not going to lose any range of motion, but you're also uploading information to the nervous system from this joint of all of its ranges of motion. That way it makes the athlete much more dynamic because they actually know how to navigate the internal parts of their body. Right. So that's something, and it's going to maintain the health and function of your joints on the back end too. And then we do these other things. Unfortunately, they're kind of hard to describe because when you're doing this stuff, there's not like, unfortunately, it's not like, oh, do a squat, right? But I should have these posted online on my Instagram, or I'm sure Westside Barbell does as well. But essentially, we call them capsular cars, where essentially you're just creating rotation at this level, right? And it doesn't seem like much, but essentially you're getting that rotational tissue in the joint to start to be able to acquire length, come back from length, and you have what are called mechanoreceptors. And these are quite important. There's a lot of literature that's coming out on how important they are, but essentially that's where the majority of your mechanoreceptors are. So think of a mechanoreceptor as like, as it gets deformed by mechanical force, it sends an impulse to the nervous system to tell you where you are at in space, right? So what you're trying to do with this is you're trying to upload that information to the cortex of that athlete's brain so that they know how to control that articulation at its absolute end range. And you're trying to amplify that process. So, you know, so that essentially the athlete can respond and navigate their internal components much better to then, you know, start to compress time against whatever athlete they're going against to really leverage it and be the one that's dictating the wrestling match compared to the one that's getting it dictated to them.
That makes sense. And now when we look up those exercises on YouTube, do we just type in for the spine, for the hips, for the knees, and that'll have, or the shoulders rather, and that'll direct us what we should be doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And then if there's coaches, we work with a lot of coaches. So if a coach wants to take the course, it's just functional range conditioning. And that goes in depth of other components of the system, not just the controlled articular rotations. But yeah, they should be online. It's the system itself is starting to really get some exponential growth. So it should be all over the internet. I would say this though, we don't really know who's posting what. So I would kind of go to maybe like, you know, the main guys of functional range is Dr. Andrea Ospina and Dr. Michael Chivers. And those are the guys that I would kind of look to. And then essentially who they follow, that's kind of who I would follow, because at this point, I want to say that there's probably about 15,000 people globally certified in it. And there's just quality control issues like anything else. So
if you want, the Wild West.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want, you know, more signal than noise, I would start at the top and work your way down from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then now some more specifics. And I think also in terms of things that I've struggled with. Now, I know my like just shoulder overall mobility, not being able to touch. You grow up, you're able to touch behind your back like that, then you can. Is it possible to get that back? Are you able to get it to the point where your hands can touch again? Or is it now dangerous at that point because maybe your body has grown differently? So now you can, doing that would be harmful.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way I see it is, yeah, you can 100% adapt that tissue. It's got to be quite specific. I mean, it would probably be more treatment based, but there's definitely stuff that you can do to start to get more rotation. So the test that you're talking about, I know people maybe not be able to see us, but essentially that's what you're trying to test for: external rotation, internal rotation, right? So once again, you can see it's essentially an assessment to see, hey, do these shoulders rotate relative to the shoulder blade? So does the arm bone, can it rotate independently of the shoulder blade, or does the shoulder blade come along for the ride, right? And so essentially we know that if the shoulder blade starts to come along for the ride, that the tissue that's restricted is at the joint capsule level. So what that would immediately tell us is, hey, this tissue, we need to start to actually start to train and treat this tissue so that it can start to establish length. And then as it establishes more length, you'll establish more range of motion. As that range of motion increases, then essentially what happens is you'll be able to then start to acquire that rotation back. So yeah, I mean, rotation is definitely something to directly answer your question. Yes, I would 100% try to reestablish that rotation. Two, it can be done. It's going to require a training process of doing it. And three, I think that if you can get to that state, you're going to be able to have significantly more, you're going to be able to do a lot more stuff because you'll have functioning shoulder joints instead of the restriction that you're having.
Oh yeah. And everyone always says, oh, you walk like a wrestler. And I said, well, how do wrestlers walk? And I guess it's because our shoulders are coming forward. So our head's going down a little bit. Maybe our hands are turned backwards like an ape. But even basic things where, you know, you're reaching for something that's high, you know, your shoulders are already feeling it as soon as they go above your head. We're doing those basic wall slides, not being able to keep your arms all the way back. It does hinder your quality of life.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's where the inflection point starts to come, right? Because like, think about it. Like, that's why like the reverse hyper for an athlete is going to be so good for a wrestler. But like, think about what a wrestler is doing. Like you guys are essentially trying to like engulf the mold to the other person. So you're going to have a lot of spine flexion, right? But when you look at the lumbar spine, what protects the lumbar spine is extension, not flexion, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, so you need something to like hedge or protect yourself against the specialization that's happening, right? And so that's the reason why, like, you know, if you're a young kid, one of the best things that you can learn how to do is a reverse hyper with no weight, because then you're starting to get that hip extension that you say you're. So when you say like, oh, you walk like a wrestler, essentially what they're saying is like you have restriction in the lumbopelvic hip complex because of the specialization. Now, here's the interesting part. If you didn't have that specialization, you wouldn't have got to the level of wrestling that you had. So there has to be some sort of trade-off. The trade-off is, hey, let's just not lose range of motion in the joint. You see what I'm saying? So,
absolutely.
So that's where it's weird. It's the same thing, you know, like I've had that discussion with Matt Brown because he's a striker in the UFC, right? Well, like he's got this kyphosis and he's like, I don't want this, but that's what makes you such a good striker. So it's something where that's a trade-off that you have to make to where you're like, yeah, I mean, part of the sport, the toll to play the game is you're going to start to distort the spine like that. But essentially, so when you say, hey, I go to lift up and I get this pain here, see that pain on the top of the joint, that shows you that there's not enough space in the back of that joint for the ball to rotate. And so instead of, you should get a stretch back here, but instead of feeling that block here, essentially what that's showing is if that block isn't resolved over time, that's going to lead to more degeneration of your shoulder because there's just not a lot of space in that joint. And that's one of the things that optimal internal based training will take care of.
Yeah. And that's why I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So it's, I think in terms of those prehab exercises and everything that you recommended, how often should a wrestler, and even forget a wrestler, how often should an athlete who is specializing in a sport be thinking about doing those exercises?
Yeah, that's yeah. I mean, it's going to depend, but I try to be as specific as possible in answering your question. What I do is I take the volume of training, right? So I just look at like the raw data, right? And I go, hey, this kid's wrestling 5 days a week, or they're playing whatever sport 5 days a week. Well, if they're playing a sport 5 days a week, like you're looking at like 2 to 3 days a week of doing stuff, right? That volume of training has to be high. The way that I have it set up, my training partner is a pro bodybuilder. And so, and I do the programming for all of his training. And so essentially what I do is it's literally, if he's going to be in the weight room lifting 3 to 4 days a week, four at most. Well, he's doing internal based strength training 3 days a week. So you can see the ratio is literally almost a 50-50, right? Because essentially what happens is, like, think about it from like a bodybuilder perspective. Like I know that bodybuilding is all about like acquiring more muscle tissue, but if you want to acquire more muscle tissue, your joints got to be able to reach end range. Cause if not, you're not training any of that tissue. Right. So that's the reason why essentially, and we're worried about the health of him. If he can maintain the health of his career, he can acquire a lot more money through winning contests because, right. But if he's not running that system, right. Essentially, like, you know, look at someone like Ronnie Coleman, you know, who was like, he did nothing for his joint. Well, look at what's injured, like total hip replacements, multiple ones. Look at all of his spine, all the, like, those are all joint based issues. Cause he wasn't running a system on the back end to make sure that that stuff wasn't happening. So that's one of the things, one of the good parts about the pandemic is one of my business partners out in California, his name's Brian Fox. He's also another FR provider. And we've done work with several athletes that are on the West Coast. We've worked in conjunction with each other before. And we started an online training business that's essentially called Gain Access. And that's what it is. It's training the big three, but you can essentially do it at your house. So I guess to really answer the question, like, because I know it seems like I'm not answering the question because it's like so specific.
But it's a broad, but when you think of it specific, but it's also very broad. Because I'm like wrestlers and athletes in general, and how much are they specializing? How serious? But go ahead.
Yeah. So essentially we created that, and it's been a real blessing because essentially each week what comes out is we'll train, you know, I don't know how in depth you want me, but like the conjugate sequencing system is essentially about training multiple things at the same time to create cumulative multifaceted effects. Right. Well, that's what we're doing, but at the internal level. So you know, if you sign up for that subscription, essentially the first 5 weeks is going to be training that hip joint. So that hip joint gets more rotation because it's not good enough. Like when you're talking about trying to get adaptation to occur at the connective tissue level, you can't just unfortunately just train it like 2 weeks. It's got to be a longer duration because connective tissue adapts at a much slower time rate. That's the reason why connective tissue injuries are so much higher than muscle issues. So essentially, like, we have a platform to where it's supposed to be user friendly. So the athletes that I manage, they're just on there. And then I know exactly where they're at on the program. So, and we have those athletes anywhere between 1 to 3 days per week doing that type of training. And I think, and from that standpoint, that's really helped us be able to mitigate injury in the athletes that we're working with, but also increase performance.
Best to do before practice, after practice?
Yeah.
Different day of practice?
So I would do it on a different day of practice. Or actually before practice, because when you start to think about it, like when someone's practicing something, right, they're doing something very specific. They're trying to acquire a new skill, but skills require like prerequisites, right? So like a prerequisite to being a really good wrestler is going to be having a really good hip joint. So if we know that you have a dysfunctional hip joint, right, but you're trying to wrestle, we're probably going to have you do your hip joint training first, then wrestle, so that now you have an actual hip joint to then learn how to wrestle with instead of the inverse. So it kind of depends on where the athlete's at, but the majority of time, I really think that it should be done in parallel. So just like if you look at West Side System, they're going to train max effort in conjunction with dynamic effort. I think that essentially internal strength training should be done in conjunction with external strength training or sport, because once again, sport's going to start to distort how that joint functions.
Right. Right. So as a rough rule of thumb, if they are lifting weights 3 days a week, three days a week of joint work, or 4 days a week, roughly.
Yeah. That's, I try to match the volume at a 1-to-1 ratio. Okay. So yes. So that's what I do personally myself. And that's also what I have the guys that I work with do as well. I think it's the best results, but listen, if you're doing none, right? One is better than anything.
Better than nothing.
Right. So it all depends on, you know, how serious you are about your training and how far you're looking to enhance your performance and where you're looking to take it.
Right. And how much time should the joint work be? About a half hour?
Yeah. So one of the other things that we've done, one of the things that I've noticed in teaching continuing education and then also being a practitioner, right, is like there's an infinite amount of stuff that you can do. Right. So a lot of it is trying to reduce the noise, reduce the complexity, and just send the signal of what you need. So that's the reason why the other thing that we did in regards to gain access is essentially the training is anywhere between like 15 to 20 minutes. So because we have to have these athletes doing it. Right. So like if I give you like, hey, do an hour of yoga. Well, first off, yoga isn't going to get what you want. That's another whole. That's another sport in and of itself. And that's another hour of your time that you don't have. Right. So that's the reason why we really tried to compress it. So essentially like the athlete gets on there, they hit play, they go through the 15 to 20 minutes, boom, you're ready to go. So we're trying to really compress the time so that the athlete is going to be compliant with it, but also so that we're removing anything that isn't going to induce the adaptations that we want.
That's great. And that's on your website.
Yeah, so that website, it's called Gain Access with one S, because you're trying to gain access to more tissue, more range of motion, right? But yeah, so that, and then there's multiple programs on there, but yeah, that's what I would have. That is the intent of having it be that way, is essentially I had training partners that moved away. They still needed the training so that their joint stayed in function, right? So that's kind of that plus COVID is the genesis of the website.
Right. Well, that's taking lemons and making lemonade right there. That's it.
Right. Yeah.
That's what you got to do. Oh, that's awesome stuff. And it's amazing just how many athletes don't think about this at all. And they're not thinking about number one, it's going to help you. Even if you didn't care about how you're going to live when you're 22 and beyond, although I don't know why you wouldn't care about that. But even if you're just thinking about the moment, you're going to have better performance results if you could move better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is, you know, I'm not a sport coach, right? So that's not my circle of competency at all. I just assess what this individual can and can't do, right? But like, I think that's one of the main reasons why, like, if an athlete is able to run this training, essentially like their coach is able to coach them better, because someone may not be able to learn a skill because they don't have a hip. So you're trying to teach them something that has a hip and they're like, and the coach is going to get frustrated. Right. Instead, listen, like, you know, my wife, you know, we'll go to the gym and work out and she'll be like, hey, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. She's like, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a great exercise. Well, why don't you do it? It's like, well, because my joints can't do it. Right. Like, so I think a lot of times what you have is the error in coaching is you're trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. Right. And I think a lot of times it's frustrating for both the coach and the kid, but it may be just an issue where the kid's got a dysfunctional spine and they're trying, like, it doesn't matter what coaching cue you give them, the structure of their spine, right? Like it's in a state of dysfunction. So you need to start to do work to start to move it into that state. And then eventually, once that kid can get to there, because kids are much more pliable than adults in response to this training, right? That once they're there, then all of a sudden the coach becomes an all-star.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it just as you're speaking, I guess one of the things that pops into my head, maybe because word choice is very important, right? The words that we use, I've been calling it prehab and rehab. And maybe I'm thinking now, maybe just scrap that whole thing and just, your joint training, you're training your joints. It's just an aspect of your strength training.
So yeah.
Is that a better way to look at it?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you've evolved to that term a lot quicker than I did. But yeah, I mean, eventually, like essentially, like, you know, the first part of my career was kind of like, okay, prehab, rehab. And then you kind of figured out that, like, well, the high level athletes can't get away without doing this. So now that's essentially training. Right. So that's the reason why then we kind of moved from, you know, training to now like internal training. And think of it this way, like, how I view like external training versus internal training, right, is, you know, essentially you're performing work. Like when you're doing something external, right, you're essentially using force to manipulate your external environment to do a predetermined task. So like an external thing was like, if you go to take me down, it probably won't be hard, right? But you're trying to use all of your force to then take me down into a predetermined way. So that's going to affect when we look at like, well, where's that going to elicit adaptation at? Well, it's going to affect the external environment a lot more than the internal environment. So then what happens is what if we focus all of your efforts on your shoulder joint capsule? Okay, well now what's happening is all of that force, right, is now getting propagated into the system to make your shoulder better. And then by making your shoulder better, you'll be able to organize your shoulder better to then take me down, right? So that's where it's kind of like, it's still in this weird stage. You got there a lot faster than most people, but yeah, instead of prehab, rehab, it's essentially you're trying to train your joints or the internal components of your system so that when you wrestle or whatever you do, you have really good organization that happens. So then the emergent behavior is very good. And then you just try to upregulate that on the back end. You use that joint training to sustain the structural system so that those emergences can continue to emerge time and time again. And that's essentially what leads to elite level performance from a physical perspective.
That makes a lot of sense. All the stuff's great. And I'm just going to watch this probably several dozen times over and over because you're dropping gold here and it's, you know, I'm trying to get it all to process, but it's phenomenal. So I'm thinking on your site, that's the best place to go for most, like just any athlete, go there and then they have the joint training program, basically. Do I understand that right?
Yeah. So essentially it's a subscription. So each month what happens is we set it up just like I'm sure Tom may have mentioned, they have the Conjugate Club for Westside. Well, we have essentially Gain Access. And what Gain Access is each week you get the internal training for that joint program to you. It's in a video plus a description so that it's real user friendly. You can do it wherever you want. You don't need any equipment. Essentially, my business partner, Brian Fox, he essentially coaches you through it. On the back end, I do all the programming. So I deal with kind of the frequency, the volume, the intensity, all that stuff, so that we're eliciting or we're going to try to really elicit adaptation that we want in the connective tissue, the joint workspace. And then also what type of muscle fiber we're recruiting to do that work, whether it's fast twitch or slow twitch. That's one of the issues that I kind of see in training now is everyone's more fast twitch dominant and they don't think that they need that slow twitch fiber. So, but you got to figure the slow twitch fibers, right? That's what's really protecting your joint. That's why we essentially combine or work in parallel slow twitch in conjunction with fast twitch. So yeah, I would say right now, you know, I'm so focused on that and then essentially releasing this other seminar that I don't really know what's out there in the market. But yeah, I would say that. And then if you're a coach and you want more information, feel free to reach out to me or even take the functional range conditioning course. And that's going to give you a huge background to maybe start to get people to think more about the individual instead of what the individual is producing.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. And then any athlete can follow that protocol, or if you had a wrestler, you would have them follow a different protocol. I mean, of course it's a general thing, right? If you're working with an individual, it's going to be highly specific. So, but if you're just generally speaking, a wrestler could do this and that's.
Yeah. Yeah. So I designed it. Like I said, I've had to do like a lot of research on conjugate sequencing system, all this stuff, right? So the goal of the system is so that anyone can take that training and run it in parallel with whatever they're doing. So you could be a golfer, you could be a wrestler, you could be someone who sits on the couch. It doesn't matter, right? But essentially what that training has done, because I won't get into it too much, but essentially like what I see in having to work with a lot of strength coaches, a lot of, you know, a lot of a lot of athletes is when you start to look at all the work that they're doing, not all the work, they're doing a lot of work, but they may not be going anywhere they need to be, if that makes sense. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to create an internal, essentially a way so that the athlete could get exactly what they need to do without changing any of the other stuff, so that it adds to them, instead of being like, hey, do this class, it's going to take an hour, go do Pilates, like all these alternatives that they're not like, it's good to give like filter, but like you don't want to get better at yoga, you want to get a better hip joint. So do this training, get a better hip joint, that'll make you a better wrestler. Instead of getting better at yoga may actually make you a worse wrestler.
Right. Exactly. Right? It's good.
Yeah. So that's essentially the reason why we tried to think of the program as really trying to constrain it so that it's literally only what the athlete needs, nothing more. And then they can run that in parallel with whatever other program they're on or whatever other sport that they're on.
That's phenomenal. Excellent. Really great.
Yeah.
Basically anything else that I missed or anything else that you wanted to hit on? I know your wealth of information. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up or anything, any roads that we went down that you wanted to go into more detail?
No, I don't think so. I hope that I was able to maybe give some insight into like, what I see. Right. And, you know, hopefully, help the actual active participant in the sport, you know, so hopefully, you know, a lot of young wrestlers and really any athletes listen to this and maybe start to get them to think, you know, more about how they're spending their time doing their training. And then also, you know, what that training is leading to. Is it actually, you know, are you just getting better at doing a squat? Are you getting a better hip joint? Like, are you running these things in parallel? But no, I mean, that's kind of all I had to say, I guess.
Awesome, John. Phenomenal. And I'm really getting me to think about all this from a different perspective too. So it's tremendously helpful. One more question for you popped into my head, and it, not to put you on the spot, I do hundreds of these shows. You have the best eye contact of anyone that's ever been on the show. What are you doing for looking at the camera here?
Oh, I just have it. Well, it's probably because I do. So my business partner is out in California, so I'm always having to stare at the screens. And now a lot of athletes that I work with, because I can't travel as much. So it's probably due to that. But I wasn't aware of it. So thanks for making me aware of it. So that
hundreds of these presentations that I do. And like the whole time you're talking, I'm like, right, I'm right there with you. I feel like you're looking right at me. And I said, man, not only can I learn from this, but anyone else who watches can learn from that too. So it's a big deal.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, man. I appreciate that feedback.
Great stuff, John. Thank you very much. And we'll make sure we send people your way. We'll timestamp the show and we'll throw the links to everything that you said in the show notes.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.